Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another night of Full Spectrum Radio. I am Matt, and with me, as always, is Sandy S. Dennis. What's going on, Sandy S.?
You're an asshole. Good evening, everybody. I wasn't expecting that one. Thanks. Here I'm sitting with a mouthful of Coca-Cola and about spit it across the laptop.
So, yeah. You knew that was coming, man.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it. I'm paying attention to other things and trying to find stories to relate to tonight's show. Yeah, Sandy asked. That works. That's about the way I feel at this point.
For everybody who's not going to understand that, Dennis says he logged on to the board for the show. You can type in people's names and see what's you know, so we know who is who as far as their phone number. Well, I look on, or Dennis goes, "Hey, did you see my name on the board?" And I look on it, and he goes, and he has Sandy S. there. And I was like, "Sandy S.?" He goes, "Yeah, that's about how I felt after the ice bucket challenge that Dennis completed earlier today, who completely one-upped me. I mean, completely one-upped pretty much everybody. But, yeah, dude, that yours is pretty epic. I literally got done with mine about 16 minutes before the show started. And so Lyle Lotz, mine's being uploaded to YouTube right now. Thanks for calling us up, brother. We got it done. You saw Dennis's. You'll be seeing mine shortly.
Yeah, well, for those that don't know, be sure to take a peek at my Facebook wall. This CPR Dennis. It's also under my personal Dennis S. log. I called in the assistance of a dear friend of mine, Terry Henderson. Thank you again, brother. It was about 30 gallons of water out of a very large excavator that, went over my head. So, however, bucket on the excavator wasn't clean. There was still a lot of dirt left in it. Needless to say, it took me 2 showers to get all the sand and dirt out of my hair. I'll probably still be working a week from now to get it out of my ass crack.
Hence, Sandy, yes.
Yeah.
But,
and
well,
I have discovered the dirt in Virginia doesn't grow very good soil, and I know why. It tastes like crap.
Well, all right. The best part of the video was two things. One, you had only about a shot glass of water that missed you, and you moved over to that like there wasn't going to be enough in there. And then the second part of it was the completely full shirt pocket that you had that you proceeded to slap and launch it into the air, which, and all right, for everybody, when you go and watch it, tell me you don't think Ace Ventura in the first one, when he walks out of the bathroom at the party at the mansion after he fell in the shark tank. That was, Dennis basically, without even knowing it, replicated that to a T. So
it was definitely fun. But hey, I do want to make, you know, even though it's fun to watch all the videos and, you know, some of the best ones I think are the fails, but, you know, hopefully nobody really gets hurt by them. I have a video that I found or was actually called to my attention from one of our teammates, CPR Tracy. Tracy Ann actually tagged me in this and said, let me see if I can find it. For some reason, it isn't on her wall at this point. But anyway, it shows a young man whose mother has ALS. It shows, well, the same young man, his grandmother has ALS. He is diagnosed with ALS. And he explained that his hands are starting to atrophy. Before long, he won't have use of his hands. After that, as it progresses, he won't have use of his arms. After that, he will lose the use of his legs, won't be able to walk. That's the real truth about ALS. It's not a pleasant thing. And as funny as all these videos are, and as annoying as they are on people's walls, Facebook walls and so forth, keep in mind this has done the single most thing for the ALS association of any fund drive they've ever done. So far, I believe there's $22 million has been raised. I sent in, well, I actually logged on today and made my donation afterwards. So we'll see how it goes. Hopefully this does something, and maybe it can help save some lives or at least make lives a little better.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is I still have yet to log on and do the donation because I was in such a frenzy to get the challenge done before we started the show, which I do apologize, everybody. Was going to be done on the show, but apparently you cannot record during a phone call on the broadcast at the same time, so that's why we had to do it before the show, talked about it on the show. But yeah, I mean, even though we did the challenge, it's kind of like the way it's put out there is people either or, but both Dennis and I, we said, hey, you know, we got called out, we're going to definitely take the challenge. Dennis did it a little more like a rock star than I did. He also had more time. So, short of flying to Alaska and sliding down bare ass down a glacier and dropping in the ocean, I don't think I could have topped yours, though.
It wasn't a matter of more time. It was a matter of, I tried to get a location to respond to me. I was actually going to do it in front of one of our quote-unquote haunted locations. I couldn't get a response, so I didn't want to just take the chance and show up. So I did it instead in the middle of a construction site. Last-minute thing, but it worked out. Yeah, just keep in mind that it's a very worthwhile cause.
Yeah, I mean, it's a degenerative disease that isn't going anywhere anytime soon. There's really not much that you can actually do about it. It's just, it's a progressive thing that, you know, eventually is going to completely overtake somebody, and that's why I stand behind it. There was a, here's a funny thing about that. There was a video on the news of they were talking to somebody in Africa. On the flip side of it, they're like, so you're telling me that people take perfectly good water and perfectly good ice and just completely waste it by dumping it over themselves for fun and for charity? Like, water is precious to us, and people just go ahead and waste it. And that wasn't a perspective that I really expected to come out because of it. But at the same time, the whole theory behind the challenge is sacrifice and discomfort in a sympathetic kind of way. That's, if you read into
it. If it makes them feel any better, yeah, I wasted 2 bags of ice. The 30 gallons or so of water was all rainwater collected in a barrel on the job site.
Yeah. Oh, did you buy the big bags or the small bags?
Oh, they're 2 big bags.
Yeah, I had 2 of those. But let me tell you, it doesn't take long to chill a kiddie pool with 2 bags of ice.
Well, I was amazed how rapidly that 30 gallons of water or so got quite chilling. It kind of took my breath away.
Here's my question. Why the hell doesn't my drink get that cold that fast?
Yeah, no shit. I'm sitting here now with a giant cup of Coca-Cola, and I'm going, you know, you got to swirl it around. And, no, he didn't swirl anything around in that Traco.
That's a conundrum for Sir Isaac Newton.
I'm not thinking he's going to get you that one anytime soon, brother. You might
probably
want to
not.
Think about somebody else pulling that one out of the hat. But I want
yeah.
to congratulate Daniel Hoven. Daniel's status posted 10 minutes ago. He took a cold shower and wrote a check for $50 to ALF. He said he thinks that complies with the rules. So there we go. And see, even those that aren't posting the video and blowing up your Facebook wall and whatnot, it's even getting them to step to the plate and help out ALF. And that's all it was about. Now, I will say, I wish the hell I could have done mine the same way that Charlie Sheen did. His video, he takes a rather large kitchen pot, says that he was called out, takes a deep breath, dumps the pot over his head, and he goes, oh, wait, that wasn't ice. That was $10,000 in cash that I will be donating to ALF. I wish the hell I could do it that way.
Yeah.
But
well, here's the question.
Way,
was it, you know, was it cocaine water?
I don't know if it was cocaine cash or not. He's probably going to have to deal with one less party over the weekend for that, though.
Yeah. So, you want to roll us into the topic of tonight's show, or?
I may be able to do that.
Yeah.
I will do my best. How is that?
That works.
All right. So, topic of tonight's show is Frank Sumption. Now, for those that don't know him, he is kind of the godfather and creator of what we all use as paranormal investigators. His was called the Frink's Box. It was one of the original ghost boxes. Well, it was the original ghost box. And then everything else kind of took off from that. The SB7, the SB11, you know, when Gary Golka started his, they were based on what Frank had already made. So he basically designed a radio that allowed us to well, we believe. Speak to the other side. Tragically, we lost him this week. I believe Sunday afternoon, Sunday morning. But what he leaves behind is a magnificent piece of equipment that can hopefully help us get to the other side communications-wise. Find out what it's like on the other side. Find out what's, well, basically find out what happens when we pass. So for those that aren't familiar, a spirit box or Frank's box rapidly scans through radio frequencies, generating mostly white noise that we believe spirits can manipulate and talk to us through.
Well, and one of the amazing things about Frank is, too, is for what he did in his contribution as far as what he received back in monetary gain was pretty much nothing.
Yeah. The majority of his, he pretty much gave away for minimal cost. Several of them he did give away. Just straight up gave them away, gifted them. So I think for what he did was pretty amazing. And there's actually a funding account set up for him to help his family with the cost of his passing and funeral and everything else. So I'm going to read, Tim Woolworth actually wrote this up, and I'm going to read part of that. He passed away in the early morning hours, 17 August 2014. His legacy in the field of ITC communication will impact generations of future researchers. His Frank's box opened the door for interactive two-way communication with the others. Frank never wanted to get rich making boxes. He did it solely to let other researchers begin communicating with the other side. Frank was a very giving man who firmly stood against anyone making money from using his devices. He often gave away his boxes or charged minimal amounts, and always gave away his schematics and offered advice for budding box builders. For a few of us in the paranormal field, he meant so much. For so many, he meant something. He gave to all of us without care of profit. He sat back while watching others profit upon his ideas. If you've ever used a ghost box, spirit box, radio hack, shack hack, or even a ghost box app, you have Frank to thank for that. Now is the time to give a little back to help his family. Several of his friends and colleagues have pulled together their resources to make the donation process reflect his life's work. They have ghost boxes, Frank's boxes, and everything else that they're going to randomly draw to allow you to win those. So go on to GoFundMe, look up Frank Sumption, S-U-M-P-T-I-O-N, and lend a hand to his family for a man that did a lot for us.
Yeah, I'm actually looking for the link on it as we speak.
I'm going to copy it, and I will throw it in chat. So if anybody is wants to step in the chat, you can find that.
And I will also throw it out on Facebook. You can find it on CPR Matt, and Dennis, I'll put on your wall as well.
Putting a status with it now.
So, all right. Speaking of which, and how much influence he's had, how many different variations of the Frank's box do you have?
Do I? I only have one variation. I only have the SB7. I am, however, looking to pick up a, well, I want to get the SB 11, of course, latest and greatest, dual sweep, the whole nine yards. But I want one of the older original Radio Shack Shack hats.
Well, part of the reason that, and if you look for those online, Radio Shack has stopped producing that model that the modification is for and does not sell it anymore. I have, and as far as Frank being ingenuitive and all that, I don't own an actual Frank's box, but my Shack hacks, I have six Shack hacks that I've modified in different ways. And I don't know about you, but I pretty much use them on every investigation that I go on. It's like, all right, we're going to do an EVP session. All right, let's do a spirit box session.
Yeah, we do the same thing. I've got some really cool responses out of it. I wish I had the time today, I would have actually uploaded them to the board.
Find the one that that Jody did.
Oh, yes.
That's a perfect example of it.
I do not remember exactly what that one was called, though.
That's,
I believe it was Skin
You Skin You. Yeah.
But I am looking for that now. I had completely forgotten that was on the board.
I did too, and just now.
Damn it. I don't know what it's actually called.
All right, well, while Dennis is looking for that, the link for if you do want to donate, you do want to help out as far as the expenses and with how much Frank has helped us out as investigators and scientists, if you will, and just people that pique their curiosity. It's www.gofundme.com/ B as in dog, the number 9, T as in Tom, 3-3, S as in Sam. So that'll bring you directly to it. If you're not on Facebook right now and you want to write it down, but yes, it's on a GoFundMe account, D as in dog, 9, T as in Tom, 3-3-S. So if you want to check it out, feel free. Definitely appreciate it. Going to be making my donation very, very soon. So you got that queued up, Dennis?
I've got it queued up, my friend.
Alright, this is a dear friend, Jody Parks, who was on Terrify Radio on Tuesday nights. She was at, I believe,
Farrar's Home.
Yes.
It was at Farrar School.
This is probably the best evidence of a spirit box session, ghost box session, whatever you want to call it, that I've ever actually heard as far as response goes. So if you want to go ahead and play that, it's pretty awesome.
There you go.
Do the other men here bother you?
We will skin you alive.
Oh!
And as you can tell by their responses, they weren't really too excited about it. It was something that kind of got looked over and missed.
Yeah, they barely caught it. Jesus, sarcasm out the wazoo on that one. Now, if you're not familiar with the way these devices work, it scans constantly through radio frequencies. Farrar School is kind of out in the middle of freaking nowhere. So they don't have a whole lot of radio frequency. You'll notice the noise in the background before Jody speaks and you'll notice very briefly after she speaks, then you'll notice dead silence and the voice that says, I will skin you alive. Now, that means that spirit was strong enough to block out every other ounce of noise coming out of the device to speak. And, you know, the device doesn't stop scanning. So that was probably over a series of, I would say, 14 to 16 channels. That is a amazing piece of evidence off of the ghost box.
Why don't you run that one more time?
Do the other men here bother you?
And we will skin you alive.
Oh! Shut the fuck up! Shut the fuck up!
Oh my God!
Shut the fuck up!
So, there is nothing that's on the... There is nothing that's on the radio... As you can hear all the chitter-chatter and the little blips, that's what's being picked up on that radio station at that one time. If you do the count of it, that would have been over the span of 8 radio stations. Well, you don't hear the clicks, you don't hear the blips, you hear absolute dead silence and a male's voice with an accent come out, saying, I will skin you alive. I've never heard something that strong come out of these ever. And the person that they thought that they were...
Go ahead.
The person that they thought they were talking to was the janitor of the school who was accused of molestation and a bunch of other disgusting acts of the children in the school. And if I remember correctly, from Farrar, he actually passed away in the school. So he was not a kind individual.
Yeah, I believe he did pass away in the school. And it was believed that because he was a not nice individual, some of the psychics and mediums and so forth that have been through there and some of the previous EVPs and whatnot, he states that he was being picked on, I guess, by the other spirits there. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be the reason for her question.
Yeah, and I wouldn't exactly want that response.
No, that would be... Yeah, I mean, I thought mine was bad. Mine was a simple FU. And that was in front of... Actually, that was with Lyle Lotz from Twisted Paranormal. This whole team was sitting... Well, majority of the team was sitting in the room when we got that one. And it's... It's pretty amazing. You know, even though we don't know absolutely positively that we are speaking with the other side, when you get answers back like that, you can be fairly certain that you're speaking with somebody that's no longer with us. I just think it's an amazing piece of evidence. I mean, it was an amazing device that Frank came up with, and hats off to him and rest in peace, brother. We're definitely going to miss you in the field.
Oh, and the one person that was there when they got that on the Frank's box, or on the, they were using the Shack Hack, actually, at that time. When they got that on the Shack Hack was our dear, dear friend, Miss Sarah LaBrie, who today is her birthday, actually, so I want to say happy birthday to Sarah.
Yeah, most definitely. Happy birthday, Sarah. We hope you've had a wonderful day, darling. I've seen where you got to go horseback riding and all of that, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I do have a caller now, so I will click over.
And we know who that is.
I think so. It's probably somebody much, much prettier than you. Of course, even Mr. Ed beats that.
Yeah, that's not exactly hard to do.
Nah.
Hey, Ursula.
Hi, you guys. How are you?
All right, dear. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks.
So we've been talking about somebody who I know you were friends with, a Mr. Frank.
Yes.
And his contribution to the field and all of us and what he did as far as just as a human being and how awesome he was.
Yeah, he was such a cool guy. And, you know, everybody says the same thing and everyone can see all the tributes on all of his social media and everything that he was just, he always spoke his mind and he knew what he thought about everything and he was never afraid to say it. And he was not afraid to be innovative, be creative, and just talk about anything under the sun, all the possibilities out there, which, you know, I think all of us are guilty. We get into these ruts of trying to say the right thing or have a trendy opinion or the, you know, something that sounds important or sounds serious or sounds legitimate. And he was never like that. He always was very open-minded and always, you know, he was one of the first people I think that had a real understanding of the overlap with, you know, among all the phenomena that we consider paranormal, whether it's ghosts and hauntings, UFOs, cryptozoology, whatever. You know, he really had an understanding of this great unified, you know, universe out there that has all of these mysteries that we're trying to understand. And that was one of the biggest contributions that I think that he made was by setting that example for us to follow.
By the way, thanks for calling that out, Dennis. I completely didn't even pay attention to that. The who we're talking with is the lovely Ursula Bielski. I didn't even say who it was.
Yeah, whatever.
I figured it. I figured it might want to let people know who the hell we're listening to instead of, you know, just somebody off the street that just called in.
Which would be fine.
I met Frank at 7-Eleven, but I don't know anything about him.
Now, have you guys had Jeff or Nancy Resnick on the show tonight?
Not tonight. I sent them a message. I know Jeff has kind of had a little bit of a medical episode. So
yeah, he's got a chronic medical condition that he's had a lot of problems with lately. Jeff and Nancy Resnick, I met them soon after we did our first Chicago Ghost Conference in, I think, 2005. And one of the presenters at our conference, which was at the Congress Hotel, very haunted location in Chicago, was Mark Macy, who is, you know, still very closely associated with World ITC, Instrumental Transcommunication, and has always been very involved in the study of ITC and research in ITC. And Mark was, of course, this huge hit at the conference, sharing his information about the colleagues that he had that were getting phone calls from people like Constantine Radove and other colleagues that had passed away, phone calls and email messages embedded in their computers and images on their televisions on the static channels. And I, you know, Matt, you know me as an investigator. I was never so much into it. I was always into the history and into interviewing people and getting their experiential evidence of haunted places that I would go to. And investigating was something that I was kind of cold towards since I was an undergrad, and I found that places that I would go to with a parapsychology student that I was working with, he would dismiss places as inactive or unhaunted if there was no hard, you know, physical evidence that could be gathered with equipment. And so I was turned off to equipment very early on because my job in these cases was to interview people that had had experiences. And I felt it was very unfair to dismiss these very impressive experiences that they had that sometimes changed all of their ideas about everything, including God in some cases, because there was no physical evidence that could be collected on this one visit or whatever. So I kind of steered away from using equipment to study the paranormal and to collect evidence. But listening to Mark Macy, and at his conference, at the conference, he brought with him this device that he and his colleagues had built, and I can't think of the name of it right now, but I'll think of it in a minute. It was a device that changed the quality of the molecules in the atmosphere around where it was running. And according to Mark Macy, allowed the dead to actually appear in photographs that were taken with the living in the area. And he came packed with Polaroid cameras and Polaroid film, and I still have the Polaroid pictures that Mark Macy took of me at the Congress Hotel with these spirit faces around my face. And this was just an amazing experience, and I started a correspondence with Mark Macy about communicating with the dead and doing this through EVP. And his, you know, his solution to the best way of doing EVP was to just use a simple tape recorder, anything, magnetic tape or digital recorder, anything. This is a few years back, mostly magnetic tape. And I started to do it. And Matt, you know me too. Like, I do not want ghosts in my house. I don't want to talk to anything that's in my house. This is the way I always was, right? Like, I want to come home from ghost hunting and go to bed in my unhaunted house. But it was Mark Macy that changed this for me. And it was the difference between the idea of going into a place that's ostensibly haunted to try and record voices or get evidence, as opposed to simply turning on a tape recorder where you are in your home, where you're comfortable, and doing it on a regular basis with the goal of trying to create a bridge between this world and the next world with people that presumably are on the other side trying to do the same thing. And so that was the difference. I wasn't trying to contact ghosts in my apartment. I was trying to communicate with workers on the other side that were trying to do the same thing. And that concept opened up the doors for so many people. And it's that concept that Frank Sumption was working off of when he invented the Frank's Box. It was this idea of creating a bridge of communication between this world and people on the other side that have the same interest. And so this is a difference, and this is something that I think a lot of people have lost sight of this idea, and probably more people never even have been aware of it. Because, you know, like I said, when I started doing EVP seriously, I started this way. But I think so many people that try to collect EVP or collect evidence via ITC are not even aware of this idea of bridge building rather than trying to pick up whatever artifacts are at a haunted location. So, again, Frank Sumption, he always had this idea. He always had this idea of bridge building. And and connecting with, you know, friends on the other side, making friends on the other side. And it's inspired so many people over the years. When I first started recording after becoming friends with Mark Macy, I did as you said. I used a tape recorder, and I recorded at the same time every day in the same place in my home for just about 10 minutes. And over time, saw that I started to get voices, voices that were familiar, same voices over and over. And then I met Jeff and Nancy Resman, and it was Jeff who asked me if I would be interested in a device called the Joe's Box, which was one of the very early inspirations from the Frank's Box, which was made by the Joe's Boxes were made by Joe Choppy, who has just passed away last year, I believe. And there are very few Joe's Boxes that were made. And this is just a very standard box that has three knobs on it. One's for volume, one's to adjust the width of the band, the radio band that you're scanning through, and one's to adjust the speed of the scan. And it's amazing. It's I've had it for, Jeff had asked Joe to make it for me, I want to say 10 years ago, and it's something that I have lent to countless people over the years. And I've only found out in the last year that there's only a handful of them, and they're worth like thousands and thousands of dollars, I guess, because they're so rare. Sadly, Frank and I just became real. I mean, we'd always been, I guess, colleagues, whatever, that knew of each other, and I always followed his work. But we started talking only in the last year, and it was mostly about cooking and baking, because as his fans know, he would love to cook and bake and would always post all this great stuff he was baking on Facebook. And I actually asked him for advice on making bread and stuff like that. But we started to talk about the relationship between making things with your hands as opposed to this ethereal world that we live in, you know, as paranormal investigators. And it was just, these are great conversations. But it was funny because there is another investigator in Chicago with the same name as me that Frank had made several boxes for and gotten into a lot of fights with at the end, because I guess she was selling them on eBay or whatever. And I said, he said that the spirits would call out the names of people that they should, you know, he should make boxes for. And I said, Frank, you got the wrong Ursula. You got to make me a box. So he'd made this other Ursula all these boxes and never made me one. And I was like, come on, what? I never would have asked him, you know, but once we got talking about bread and buns and whatever, I said, like, Frank, you got the wrong Ursula. You got to make me a box. So he was in the process, he said, of making me a box when he stepped over onto the other side on a Saturday night. So I never got my Frank's box. But it's there in pieces somewhere. And I got my Joe's box that I'll still use. And, of course, his inspiration has gone to so many people that have created all of these wonderful tools. Always looking for a slightly better way to try and to build that bridge. So he will be greatly missed, not only for his ingenuity and his courage and his scientific ideas, but also just as just such a courageous speaker, always speaking his mind and sharing his ideas, not being at all afraid of who he was in every way.
Well, and also, I mean, for how far his reach actually goes, that I don't think a lot of people take into consideration. It's at the very, very end of the movie, but the movie White Noise, which I think was, 2002
yeah.
or something like that, was Michael Keaton?
It was a while ago, yeah, it was a while ago.
That whole premise of the movie was based around ITC. And at the very, very end of the movie, when the wife and the kid are sitting in the car, the radio starts scanning at a very, very fast rate. And then Michael Keaton's voice comes through.
Yeah.
So that's the whole premise.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have just randomly come up with that. That
yeah.
wouldn't have
oh,
been
no,
something
of
like.
Not. No, of course
yeah.
not. Yeah. Yeah.
That developed.
This is all him. This is all him.
Yeah. So I mean, even that section of it, that portion of it, came from Hollywood used it.
Mhm.
So you want to talk about a pioneer? That's definitely the person you want to talk about is Frank.
Yeah, he definitely was, and he's, and he never, ever, you know, wanted anyone to talk about him. He would hate this, of course, and never wanted anyone to allow anything that he did. He was just doing it for fun. He always, you know, every other picture on Facebook was something that was, you know, some sort of board that he was working on with all of his wires and connectors and everything, and it was just what he was interested in. He was just always seeing if whatever what else he could do, and unfortunately everyone noticed and realized, you know, and told him how great he was, and he just never wanted any of that attention, you know. He just always wanted to talk about the possibilities.
So what in, and I know we've done a decent amount of investigations together, but ones that I haven't been on when you've been at these notorious locations, I know you run, now that you've turned to the dark side of electronics, I'm sure that you've gotten something that you're like, yeah, there's no way that I can explain this, which would have been a derivative of what he was creating. You know what? I don't think I've ever asked you this. What is your best evidence you've got from an electronic device?
Again, the best evidence I got, I think, was when I was first experimenting with EVP as far as the bridge building, and using magnetic tape recorder and then using the Joe's box that Joe Choppy has made for me. And it was kind of weird timing, because just at that time, an aunt and an uncle had passed away. And I was able to get some really interesting stuff through the box. I think the combination of the fact that they had just recently passed and how excited I was, and that energy, of course, is a big part of it. My Aunt Katie had passed away, and just before her death, her brother, Fritz, had passed away about 2 weeks before, and Katie was a sweet, lovely woman. Fritz was a handful, like, his whole life. And when he died, it was kind of the same situation as my dad. My dad was a handful his whole life, too, and we actually put on my dad's tombstone, "In God's hands." But when Fritz passed away, we were all the same way, like, oh, God, what's going to happen to Fritz now? And so I asked my Aunt Katie via my Joe's box during one of my, you know, 10-minute daily sessions, is Fritz with you? And she said, in her voice, yeah, Fritz, he's here. And I said, did he have a hard time crossing over and getting to where you are? And she said, in her just typical Aunt Katie voice, I lifted him up a lot. And it was just, it was her voice. It was absolutely clear as a bell, her voice, which I think is, it's really interesting with the spirit boxes. It takes so many people get it wrong they hear the wrong things. They're listening for bites of sound that are actually coming through the radio, and they're not listening for what actually happens, which is that ostensibly the spirits or whatever it is using these bits of sound to create their own voices. And so you're not trying to patch together little sounds that you hear coming through the radio. There develops a line of communication under or over the radio wave. And it takes a very patient person to have the wherewithal to wait for that and to allow that to develop over time and to finally see that there's a rapport going on. So I think it's a special person that looks for it. And I still use my Joe's box from time to time. I don't use it every day or even every week, but there are times where I feel that I should use it, and I'll turn it on every day at the same time again for about 10 minutes. And it's, you know, and it's at normal times when someone's passed away or when I feel like I'm searching for something or I'm unsettled or something. And I've seen people, colleagues of mine, that have gotten very obsessed with the ghost box. And I'm sure you've seen this too, probably, right?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. It's some people, it becomes an obsession. They just do it all day and all night to the, you know, detriment of their families and their children, their jobs and everything else. And of course, I think there's always the possibility that there are things coming through because you are opening this doorway, that there might be the possibility that there are other things coming through that are actually aligning to you and attaching to you. When I got my Joe's box from Joe Choppy, it came with a typed prayer of protection that was scotch taped to it, long since fallen off. Jeff Resden sent me a copy of it to redo. But it's that kind of thing. You know, you always have to be careful of that because it's, and I think Frank was aware of that too. I mean, he was a very sensible, no-nonsense person in this weird way, and that he was open to communication with the dead, communication with ethereal beings, communication with aliens, even with God. But he is very sensible as well. And I think that's something that a lot of people aren't when they're doing these things too.
Well, can you think of any times that you hung out or were talking with Frank, some of what he had relayed as to what he had found with his experimenting with the units?
I think most people would say that that the main thing to remember about Frank is that he really came to the point where he felt that there was no way to distinguish between whether we were talking to the dead or we're talking to individuals from another planet, another sphere. And so that was, I think, the point that he got to, where he felt that there was no way to distinguish what these voices were. And that's something that I've seen in pretty much every established researcher, is that it gets to the point where you're just collecting voices, experiencing voices with this sort of sense of wonder and realization that you don't know where they're coming from.
And that's, I'm kind of at the same thought. I'm not sure who in the hell I'm actually communicating with. I know I'm getting communication. I know I'm getting answers that are, you know, valid. So it still makes
me wonder. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of all the controversy about the Ouija board. Like, is Is the information on the Ouija boards coming from people who have passed away, or is it coming from demons or evil spirits, whatever? We've heard these conversations forever. And I think it's even more relevant with the use of spirit boxes or ghost boxes. There's just all of this energy out there. There are all of these voices out there. And we don't know where they're coming from. It's this whole energy field that we're tapping into. And we're just at the, you know, threshold of not even beginning to understand where these voices are coming from.
Yeah, now, I went with a fellow team that I'm pretty close with here in my neck of the woods, and that was the All-Seeing Paranormal Society. They had a emergency call out to a location where it was a retail location dealing with antiques. So, you know, you never know. And it, believe me, I would definitely love to have Zappas and his team out there. I know there was a shitload in this place. But they had had an item that it was back around the corner, so an employee didn't see it, but the customer that was in there said he was standing right by it. It was a ceramic item that was sitting on this little side table. And he came around the corner. The employee that I spoke to that had actually talked to him said he was just pale white. And this piece had just been, like, thrown on the floor, but the strange thing was there was glass still on the table from it, but there was glass on the floor, like, 5 feet away. Well, the owner had taken in a box from consignment stuff, or not consignment, but, estate. And in that, he found a, I'll quote him, it was an old Ouija board. It had that little wooden thing, and it was an actual wooden board, which, you know, you don't see wooden Ouija boards current with an actual wooden planchet. Well, he said after the strange incidents had occurred, he threw the Ouija board in the dumpster. Needless to say, I went dumpster diving. I was too late, apparently. But we broke out the SP7 in that location, and I asked him, are you okay with this? Yeah, I'm fine with it. Why wouldn't I be? I said, well, you didn't want the Ouija board in here, but you're okay with us doing this. Do you understand the similarity? No. I said, well, basically the Ouija board, you're asking spirit to interact with you and by moving the planchet. I said, with this, I'm doing the same exact thing, only I'm using the radio and asking spirit to interact with me. Oh. I said, either way, I'm opening a portal, and I'm asking them to come forth. Oh.
And he, at that point, he said, get the hell out.
No, actually, he said, you know what? I don't know shit about the Ouija board. Apparently, you know what you're talking about, and you know what you're doing. Go ahead. So, you know, I opened the session, ran a nice session, got some decent responses, none of which do I have uploaded to the board, sadly, or I would play them. And then at the end, I closed the session, asked the spirits to return where they came from. And he looked at me afterwards, and he says, is that what's supposed to be done with a Ouija board? I said, yeah, you invite them to come talk to you, and then you ask them to go back the way they came. And he goes, so since we can't find that Ouija board, if something came here with it, can they stay here even though I got rid of the Ouija board? Yeah.
Oh heck yeah.
Shit. His response was, hey. Oh, shit.
Hey, this one.
I'm thinking, here's this antique Ouija board and planchet, and it's gone. And I would have loved to have had it.
There's been a lot of stuff going on in that junkyard. Or that landfill. Hey, speaking of spirit box and stuff like that, did you, we played it earlier, but did you ever hear what Jodi Parse got when she was at Farrar?
Mm-hmm.
On the spirit box? If you can go back to it and cue that up for her, because that, this is probably the one of the most compelling things, and they were using a shack hack at the time.
But, yeah, this one just absolutely blew me away.
But you don't have to play the full remainder after the, because, you know, everybody else has been listening the whole time, heard it, but, yeah, just the, I go a couple seconds after the voice comes through. And Ursula, I'd really like your opinion about it as far as the you know, Frank's box, ghost box, whatever you want to call it. It's nuts. It's the best I've ever heard.
Yeah, here we go.
Do the other men here bother you?
We will skin you alive.
Oh!
I don't know.
My first
thought would that be it was not set to scan fast enough, and that was actually a clip from radio. If it was set to scan fast enough, that's pretty cool.
Well, the part that was dumb to me is the hack went totally silent when that came through.
Right, right, which is indicative of a message coming through. Everything goes very quiet. It's almost like they're gathering all the bits together to use. Yeah, so that's typical. That's funny.
Well,
yeah,
that was
you can hear them just flip shit right afterwards.
That was at an event that they were doing it. That was an event they were doing at Farrar. There was probably about, I think Jody said there was like 20 or 30 people in the room. So,
okay.
If I remember, she was scanning like at 100 MBS or something like that. So it wasn't, you can't hear the breaks in it, but, I mean, yeah, it's actually scanning pretty fast. So when I talked to her about it, she said that was probably over the scan of about 8 channels.
Okay.
But the fact that it drops out, yeah, the fact that it drops out to dead silence and everybody's sitting around and somebody comes.
Very typical of Spirit Box communication, that dead silence right before.
Yeah, I was really impressed by it.
Yeah, like I said, I wished I had gotten the one uploaded that I got with Twisted Paranormal when we were out at the plantation house. I had done a remote view on that location 2 weeks before us even getting there. And I told Lyle what spirits were there and where we would encounter them. I had no clue that the owner was like third or fourth generation owner of the house, and she met us out there. We were doing a SP7 session in the upstairs bedroom where I had told him that during my remote view, I go up the steps and back to my left is a room there. So as soon as I walked into that room, I saw a tall, thin man, cheeks kind of shrunk in. I smelled liquor about him. And as soon as I walked into that room, he told me to get the fuck out. And he's like, okay, well, that's kind of interesting. Well, turns out I described this woman's, it was either grandfather or great-grandfather to her. And they later produced a picture and showed me the man that I described. And I kind of freaked out. But during the SB7 session, I made the comment, and it's actually on my SoundCloud, so you can go to SoundCloud CPR Dennis and you'll find it. But I asked him, you know, can you tell everybody that's here now that wasn't here when I came a couple of weeks ago what you told me when I walked in? And just crystal clear, it's tip fuck. Wow. And all seven people in the room just kind of freaked out. So it was, I mean, it was definitely a clear response. And, you know, this plantation was out in the middle of nowhere. So it wasn't like we were getting a lot of FM radio interference or anything.
Yeah, wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, first, I know we talked about it on the last show that you're on. We have to plan a trip down by Dennis. But
I know, we talk about that every time I'm on. You probably talk about it every show.
Yeah, I kind of go there every show.
Yeah, you do.
Not only for the paranormal, but hanging out with Dennis in Virginia, it's an experience. Just in itself.
What the hell does that mean?
You make it sound like
one of the Hangover movies.
Well, they're pretty damn close. You saw how it was in Pennsylvania. That's how it was when I was in Virginia last.
Well, that's kind
of like
true.
one of those hold my beer and watch this shit. And we're in your truck.
No, it's hold my beer and get the video camera.
No, it's
man, what can I say? I just like to have fun.
That does kind of make us sound mad. No, it's the experiences, the history, just and you being a phenomenal historian, just. The places, they're so, and it's completely different than it is here. They're so willing to let you in and tell you about what happened in that place. And
everywhere,
you know,
is so different than here. Chicago is just unbelievable. Nobody will talk about anything. They'll call the police if you come near anywhere. It's just amazing to go anywhere else, because it's just so different. Oh, yeah, we're going to sleep overnight in the cemetery. What? Like, what? It's just everything's open and it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I've got, one of the cemeteries that I have here, and I've mentioned it numerous times on air, but it's actually called the Four Cemeteries at Evergreen. There were four large plots of land that all kind of grew together over the years and became one huge cemetery. It's pretty much abandoned. But there is a one mausoleum there that has been broken into. And you can see the caskets pulled out of their resting place. I mean, just absolutely disgust me. And I did a brief little, 5-minute burst session just with my phone. I didn't have a recorder with me, but I set my iPhone inside and apologized to the family that was there, asked if they could tell me how many were inside, and it responded with 4, and I can see 4 caskets. So it was pretty interesting, and you can go in there anytime that you want.
Yeah, it's kind of like our version of Bachelor's Grove, but a larger scale. And Ursula, you know as well as I do, Bachelor's Grove did have any mausoleums in it, they'd be desecrated as well.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Oh, it's amazing at Bachelor's Grove. There's they've just put a new fence up at Bachelor's Grove with a new gate. Not locked yet, but gate's up. And the Patrick Stone, one of the most prominent and recognizable stones there, has been moved to the middle of the path. It's crazy. It's like there's been really no vandalism at Bachelor's Grove for years, and as soon as they put the new fence up, someone tried to, steal a tombstone. It's crazy.
When it was wide open, yeah. No, everything is fine. But
yeah.
Put a fence up, yeah, we're getting in there.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. All right, guys, I got to go and put my kids to bed. I'm really happy to have been talking to you. I'll send some more friends your way.
Yeah, and if, actually, real quick, before you go, if you want to throw in any plugs, any upcoming tours you have, any upcoming anything
you
have.
You know what's coming up is the Chicago Ghost Conference, November 21st
yes, I know.
To 23rd. You guys are going to be there. Everyone's going to be there. It's Amanda Alexandra Holzer, daughter of Hans Holzer, will be there. The Booth Brothers, Bob Murch, preeminent Ouija board expert in the world. Jeff Belanger, the location scout for Ghost Adventures, Dave Schrader of Darkness Radio, oh my God, psychic Cassie Ray, Scott Grunewald that we don't talk about, and oh my gosh, workshops, exhibits, Paranormal Film Festival, everything, $50 a person for a three-day pass, afterlifeparanormal.com. is where you can get tickets. It's going to be amazing. Booth Brothers is going to be there. It's going to be awesome. So, yeah, afterlifeparanormal.com. Join us for the Paranormal Film Festival, for Chicago Ghost Conference and Paranormal Film Festival. And come on our Chicago Ghost Tours, which are filling up for October. ChicagoHauntings.com. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's always definitely a pleasure. Tell the girls I say hi.
I will. They love you. I will. All right, good night, you guys. Love you.
Yeah, love you too,
Ursula. Thanks for joining us, huh?
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, well, instead of you guys constantly just talking about it, Matt, you're going to have to make it happen somehow or another to end up here. But, hey, let me jump for a minute and you cover. I've got to go screen a call.
That works for me. But yes, Chicago Ghost Conference, we're basically, it gets bigger and better every year. The awesome thing about Ghost Conference this year is not only is it a paranormal festival, but it is also a local independent horror film festival that our dear friend Willie Atkins is putting on as well. The other thing, too, is when you go to a lot of these events, it's, you know, $175, and your only general admission if you want to do this workshops at this one, since the people are putting them on, they're minute, like $5, something like that, but you get to sit and actually interact and do it. The venue that it's at is a high school in Chicago that itself is haunted. So it also includes a ghost hunt. So it's not like it's just, show up and talk to some people, listen to them speak, and I, you know, did this, that, and the other thing, and now I have to go because they're shutting down for this. No, it includes everything. So as far as what happens at the event, you're pretty much involved in anything. So $50 for 3 days is probably the cheapest event that I've personally have ever heard of.
All right. I am back, brother. And I come bringing gifts. Gifts to the other guest. How is that?
That works for me.
Actually, let me see if I can get it to release this time. It didn't release last time. But Michael Esposito is joining us now. Michael, are you with us, sir?
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me?
Hi,
Michael, brother. What's going on, man?
What's up? How are you?
Doing all right. Just doing a normal Wednesday thing. Both Dennis and I did the ice bucket challenge today. And don't worry, I didn't call you out on it. So you're safe for the time being.
It's an amazing thing, actually. At first I was like, I didn't realize it was for Lou Gehrig's disease, but once I found out what it was for, I was, well, softer on it, I guess. sensationalism for sensationalism's sake kind of like puts me off, but I realized that it was for a really good cause. And I guess what I hear is tripled or quadrupled their annual budget, you know, their or rather income intake.
It has, my understanding has increased their donations by nearly 1,000%.
Oh my gosh. See, and you know, in this economy when things are so tough and people aren't able to give like they used to, that's a great thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's raised about $22 million was the last thing that I saw. And the trouble with that, one of the videos that I looked at today, and I was talking about this earlier, the young man was saying that his grandmother, his mother, and now he has it. He says there's only about 30,000 people in the world that have this. Well, Big Pharmacy doesn't want to spend billions to figure out how to combat ALS because it's not profit for them.
Yeah.
So because of what this Ice Water Challenge has done, you know, it's getting good funding to actually be something. So that's fantastic.
It'd be interesting if they had a special event for just CEOs of pharmaceutical companies or R&D teams of pharmaceutical companies doing the challenge.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing I saw today before the show when I clicked upload, because now it's uploaded to YouTube, but I'm going to have to wait till after the show to post it, of what I did for my my challenge acceptance is former President George W. Bush did the Ice Bucket Challenge today.
Oh, wow.
So it's stretching not only to Hollywood, but to government and former government as well.
Has our illustrious president done it yet?
No,
I haven't seen that one.
No, he actually declined.
Well, that's a lot.
Yes, he did. He declined and said that his contribution would be strictly monetary donation, but he declined doing the challenge.
Wow, what a great opportunity to pass up.
Yeah, well, you're also talking about an individual that declined going to the highest-ranking member of our military's funeral to be killed in battle since, like, the 60s, I believe, and opted to go golfing instead.
Well, his spin doctor, pure Cold War era, I swear to God. You know, I mean, granted, he's the leader of the free world, and he's got to be taken seriously and whatever, you know. I got that, but honestly, to pass up an opportunity to roll your sleeves up like you pretended you wanted to do in the campaign race, and then to pass it up because some spin doctor's telling you you're going to look silly, really? Well, I guess we all make decisions.
So, I don't know. I won't even get into it.
That's why I'm trying to squash that conversation right now.
Wow.
But
there's all right.
Speaking of audio, which, Michael, you're one of the best in the world as far as audio analyst specialist goes. What's your opinion of the idea and concept behind the Frank's Box? And if, you know what, I never asked you this. Have you had any encounter or any communication with Frank at all before he passed?
Well, you know, I met Frank, like, literally, God, years and years and years and years and years ago. We were talking, we were trying to build a Frank's Box. I was I'm kind of a geek, I guess. And I got this, one of my geek fetishes is 19-inch rack mounts. And I was working with Frank and he was building me a 19-inch rack mount Frank's box that I could put in a rack mount case. I don't know if people, your listeners know what rack mount is, but the railroads in the 30s had to standardize their equipment because electronics was just like coming into being, and really in the railroad industry is where it took off, and then the radio industry. And between the two industries, they wanted to somehow standardize the equipment where they could all change over equipment and borrow each other's stuff or whatever. And they came up with a rack mount system, which was 19 inches in length, and it could be rack mounted into anybody's rack around the nation. And you could do anything with rack mounts. I mean, I've got drawers, I've got, you know, noise cleaners, power cleaners, I've got preamps, I've got stereos, I've got cassette players, I've got telephones. They have rack mount telephones, rack mount any kind of audio gear, anything you could just dream up. Someone along the line has put it to a rack mount system, and which is nice because all you have to do is patch cable things together and you can get any combination of tools you want. And so I wanted a 19-inch rack mount Frank's box so I could patch it into different cleaning equipment, audio equipment, recorders, you know, reel-to-reels. You know, I took with Ursula, we took a rack mount reel, open reel player that had a, I think I have a preamp on that one and a power cleaner that cleans the noise out of the electrical sockets. Because the power that comes out of your electrical sockets actually has noise. So we were working on building a 19-inch Frank's box, which actually never did get completed. And I've used various standard Frank's boxes and other devices like his throughout my entire career. And to answer your question, Frank's box is interesting because it builds very much off of Friedrich Jurgensen and Raw Dive, when they really built heavily on the, they were the first ones to actually build heavily on the idea that they could use radio as a medium for capturing voices from the other side and voices of extraterrestrials. And Sarah East up here in America and Raymond Cass in England followed as well afterwards. But for Jurgensen and Raw Dive, they both kind of decided what kind of hertz levels were the best for discovering them. But the way they would do it in the beginning is they would scan across the frequency range by hand dialing it. You know, so before Radio Shack a la Frank came along, it was really kind of a manual thing that people did, which two things when you do it manually it affects is one is you don't get the smoothness of fluid levels. In other words, we're talking signal and noise. And what a signal is anything that you're listening for. That's a signal. Noise is anything you don't want. So it could be anything from white noise to a traditional audio engineer to, you know, a human being speaking to someone that does research like you and I do that are looking for stuff that's in the hiss or the vapor. And what it does is it provides more of a level flow back and forth across the frequency channel or the frequency numbers without disruption. So what he was able to do is he was able to actually together something that really automated, if you will, something that some of the pioneers have been working with and tempting in a very manual and crude way.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely makes sense in theory, and then when you apply it to application, it's kind of like, hey, let's see what the hell this does.
Well, right. Well, that's the beauty of working in the unknown, right? You just can't be wrong.
Well, and that's and I remember it was the Congress Hotel, and I think we were in what was it, room 412, I want to say, or somewhere around there when you brought up the record that was specially formatted for by one of your friends in Germany.
Oh my God, you were there?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Come on, man. I did the session with you.
Oh, God, that's right. Hey, you listen, I'm going to tell you something. My brain's been going in my old age. No, I turned 50 in August, so. That's right. You were right next to me, weren't you?
Yeah. Like I said, I did the session with you.
Yeah, that's the Blank Groove records that Aki Mone made for me. And, That was really interesting and fun, wasn't it?
That it was, and you know what, I asked you this one other time, and it was at a at one of our paranormal friends' parties, but I don't remember if you had actually explored that more to see if you had gotten anything out of that, or if that was just like, hey, I tried. I just really didn't get anything off of that.
So actually the tests were really successful. The EVPs were interesting because they were a little gruffer and harsher. The beauty of it is the actual motes of dust that locked into the grooves that we recorded. For those of the listeners that don't know what happened, we took a photograph record in. It had blank grooves on it, played no sound whatsoever. We let the motes of dust, the electrically charged motes of dust, settle into the grooves, and we played it using the needle to pick up the actual electrical charges off those motes of dust that settled in. So we were actually, what we were doing was playing the room itself. We were playing the actual electricity of the room or the energy of the room and what might be manipulating any atmospheric particles or what have you. And, I've been running that experiment on and off now for a couple of years. And I like to leave, I have certain experiments that I have that are ongoing. One's the tuning forks. One's the blank groove record with the electricity, and a couple others that I just run continually over time because I want to leave some space in between the different tests, and I want to compare the results over a course of time. So that record will come out again eventually. It's been out several times since then, and will be out many, many more times in the future. And I hope you're with me when we do that.
Why, you don't remember.
Nor will you, Dennis.
Do what?
I said, nor will you. Michael probably will. Michael probably will. I don't think that you will, though.
I don't think he'd forget me. I'd be the crazy one running around.
Dennis, do you know where you are right now? You're on a radio show. Sorry, I just did.
Then what the hell is this camera doing in front of me?
That's private. Dennis, you set that up. That's private.
Oh, wait, never mind. I remember what it's for now. We won't discuss that.
There we go.
Yeah, he's simulcasting on... He's probably simulcasting on some adult site at the moment. Yes.
When I did that at the Congress, I remember... I breezed in on a last-minute invitation, and everything was a bit of a blur at that time, putting it up and everything. There were a lot of faces and people running around. It was a great time, though. The whole experience was phenomenal. I mean, overall.
Oh yeah, it's a phenomenal location, and the security guard that gave us a tour, I have to commend him on his knowledge and what he was able to pull off in certain areas that he got us in. It was probably like, dude, how awesome was the gold room?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So we just got to find more places and meet a lot more people that'll say, yeah, you know what, come on in. So I'll have to use my sales expertise and try and be like, hey, you know what, this is what I can get you. And this is what your benefit is. Because when Ursula was on just a little bit ago, we were talking about the comparison between Chicago and down south or anywhere outside of the Chicago area. Nobody wants to let you in around here.
Well, you know, Chicago's an interesting place. I mean, this is the place that, you know, mayor after mayor has done everything they could to bury the history of the gangsterism and whatever. And they just have an odd sense of disrespect for history, I guess. Chicago has a disrespectful history that's unparalleled to any city I've ever seen outside of maybe Detroit or Cincinnati. I don't know. You know, right. It seems like something with the northern states, some of them are just really down on their history.
Well, I know because you go overseas a lot. Like, do you ever experience the same thing in, like, Ireland or anywhere that you go, or is it pretty open like it is if you go down south?
UK is really good with their history. Ireland is fairly good. I mean, probably not as good as the kingdom, but Ireland's very good. Anything in the northern Scandinavia is just awesome. Italy's really awesome. Europe's awesome. I mean, Europe's just not like that. They have a better, you know, they have a better tolerance for their history. But, I mean, by far and a mass, if you want to go anywhere in Europe or the United Kingdom that really celebrates their haunted history, I guess, or their mysteries like that, it would be England. But, I mean, when you talk about untold death and horrible conditions on an island, you know, you're talking about England.
Yeah. Well, they embrace, and the way I always put it from people that I talk to of paranormal groups that are over there is they embrace their darkness. They don't, you know, they don't shut it off like it was something that never happened, and, oh, we don't want to be known for that.
Yeah, no, right, exactly. I guess it's, I hate to use this phrase, it's just, to me this is probably one of the dumbest phrases in the world, but to be man enough or to be mature enough, I guess, is probably better phrase, is to be mature enough to be able to accept your dark spots as well as your accomplishments or prides.
Yeah. Well, and that's always something that I learned in psychology, too, is your dark spots, your bad spots, are also, you know, they complement your good spots into a whole. That's what makes you you. Your history, yeah, you know what, is there anybody out there who hasn't messed up in a way or, you know, screwed up in some sort of way that was negative?
Oh, well, yeah.
Go ahead.
Sure, that's very Jungerian. You're absolutely right. Hermann Hesse wrote a novel called Demian. And in Demian, the whole novel is really pretty much based on yin and yang, if you will, or the Jungerian idea that you can't have a true God who's good if it doesn't also encompass evil. You know, if you don't balance out the good with the bad, there's nothing to compare it to. I mean, artistically speaking, you know, there's a contrast between dark and light. You have no reference to your white or your light if you don't have any, you know, solid foundation in your dark or your black.
Yeah. And that's a completely, completely 100% true concept. If you can't accept your faults and your mistakes in life, you're never going to truthfully be happy, or the people that you're talking to, if you try and come across as this perfect human being, they're going to see through your bullshit.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, even worse, you're going to be an incomplete human being.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all got faults. We've all got horrible things about us that we're not proud of. I do, you do. I mean, we all do. But if we don't embrace those along with the things we are proud of and say, well, this makes me a complete person, this makes me a whole entity, then we're going to go through life very, very incomplete and unfulfilled.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And actually, Michael, if you want to stick around, you're more than welcome to. We actually have another person who I've worked with, another Chicagoan. Daniel is with us as well. He's currently on hold. Dennis, like I said, Michael, if you want to stick around. Dennis, if you want to bring him in. Daniel, what's going on, brother?
Hey, hello, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm just listening to this and just thinking about Frank Sumpton, how much of an influence he was on me. And I don't know, I just think people should remember every time they turn on one of their boxes or, you know, whatever, that he is kind of the man who brought this to the forefront.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, since we're all for a change, and this is a pleasant change for me, we've had all the locals who have called in. Normally it's a whole bunch of Southern people against me. but, there's a question for both of you, Michael and Daniel. Like, what, Michael first, and then Daniel, you. What kind of influence has Frank had on your research?
You know, Frank really provided tools. I mean, his concepts ran hot and cold through, you know, when you talk to him, if you knew him, some days you'd talk to him and he was completely pro into his work, and other days he was like, well, I hate these boxes, I hate making them, you know, people got to stop asking me for them because I'm not going to make any more boxes. I could count the times he swore he was never going to make another box, and then he'd come out with something new a week later, you know, that has slight modifications for it. You know, the guy was a tinkerer. He couldn't stop. And that was one of the beauties about Frank is he was driven by his love and his passion of tinkering electronically, and I think we all benefited from it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, Daniel, same question to you.
Okay, well, I think one of the things he, if not taught me, it just made a lot of sense when he kept repeating it, is that you do not have to go to supposed haunted locations to do this. You can sit in your living room. I took a trip to the grocery store and recorded, got EVPs. It's not necessary to go to haunted locations and look for the spook factor and all that. And also, his thing about ETs, you know, a lot of people would laugh at him and think it's silly, but I think he may have really been onto something with that. I really do.
I'm actually surprised that both of you aren't registered SETI members.
We're not what? I'm sorry.
I said, I'm surprised that both of you aren't SETI members, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
I am.
Oh, you are?
I'm not. Yeah, I'm a registered SETI member. I've been running it since, 2004.
Nice.
Ah, wow.
All right, so Daniel, yeah. I'm surprised that you aren't.
So am I. Maybe I will be soon. But the whole concept of UFOs, paranormal, all of it just has been an endless source of fascination for me. And Frank was one of a kind. He did it out of love, as Michael said, and he had a heart of gold. No matter how he came across in his posts, the man was just a very special human being. He really was.
Well, and that's how this whole show came about, is there's so many people that he touched, there's so many people that, you know, that don't even know where all this stemmed from. And
exactly.
He was the first one, as far as known, for audio ITC.
Right.
So
and
he kind of paved the way.
Yeah, and he was the one to tell people off, look, you don't need one of my boxes. You can do this through EVP Maker, manual sweep, whatever. You know, people become dependent upon, you know, I got to have a Frank's box. But really, any box will work, I think. It depends a lot upon the user, I believe, too. Because I believe you, the user, are your own antenna in a way. It's hard to explain, but
it's the personal energy that we all have, if you will, psychic energy or what have you. But we all are receivers of a particular psychic gift our own way, I guess. And I'm going to try not sound like a white lighter here, but I believe everybody's got a particular psychic gift that they could develop. Some people are clairvoyant, some are clairaudient, some people are sensitive, some people are incredible with dowsing rods or pendulums or what have you. But you find what you're comfortable and you get good results at and that you really enjoy doing, and you develop it like a muscle to develop anything else. And what Daniel's referring to as being his antenna is along those lines.
Yeah, I wish I had met him. I never had a chance to meet him. I had always hoped to get to Pennsylvania with this woman who runs a group and actually meet him, but it wasn't to be.
Yeah, yeah, he's a great guy. I remember I was with Todd Bates in Haunted Voices, and we had, 2005, 6, 7, somewhere around there. Before we all got kicked out. But back then, I remember meeting with him, and I believe it was Deb Pickman was with us, and we did some stuff and talking about it and that. He was just a normal, friendly guy. I mean, really, he's just, that's the one thing about Frank. He was just really kind of an average Joe, wasn't he?
Yes, definitely. And I just hate the fact that I know that in the very near future people are going to begin to capitalize on his fame, especially people who own boxes and sell them on eBay for $2,000. And that is an endless source of, it just pisses me off.
You know what? His stuff is going to become quite expensive. I mean, it's like an artist. You know, stuff that he actually touched and hand-built and stuff, the value in those, they're going to go up. And they're going to go up over the years, and he's going to become, and I couldn't wish the best for him. I think it's just awesome. It's like owning a Picasso, you know?
Yes.
You may like it, you may hate it, but it's still a Picasso.
Right, exactly. But there are people who were using him all along for boxes and selling them on eBay, and I think most of us know who they are, though, so.
Well, that's one of the things Frank was really always pissed off about, was people secondhand selling his things. And that's what a lot of times kept him into production, because he was so pissed off that people were like selling, or the knockoffs. They were selling ass prank boxes. Oh, he hated that, didn't he? I remember how pissed off he got about that. It just occurred to me. He hated when anybody called something that he didn't build a Frank's box. He hated it being called Frank's box anyway, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now everybody has a box.
Yeah, right.
Well, I had the opportunity twice to use a Frank's box, and I was quite impressed, I have to admit. But unfortunately,
somehow,
never got to own one.
Somehow it's better than a Stack Hack or something like that, you know. It wasn't as crude. I mean, the stuff he did to it to smooth out the scanning of the frequencies and that disruption, really, it was kind of like how Stradivarius is made. I mean, there are a lot of violins out there, but you know, if you're going to get a cheap beginner's violin or if you get a Stradivarius, just picking it up, you could tell a difference. I mean, my brother collects and sells antique instruments.
Okay.
And when he sticks a 1954 Les Paul electric in my hands, I understand how Jimmy Page could play like he did. I mean, all he barely had to do was push the thing, and the thing made its own music. I mean,
right? Yeah.
Anybody could be a virtuoso on it, almost.
Hmm. Does anyone there have any opinions regarding the ET aspect of his work?
Personally, I think that there's something to it, and I think it should have been more accepted.
Right.
And you talk to people who deal with the alien aspect and all that. Well, the U.S. government sent out a message years ago in the deep space.
Right.
Without any knowledge of any sort of IPC or any sort of, it's like, oh, well, you know what? We're going to broadcast our history and send out in deep space, and maybe we'll get something back.
Right, yeah.
What's that movie, Contact, is based on that?
Yeah.
A movie. Contact?
Yeah, a movie called Contact.
Yeah, with Jodie Foster, right?
Right, that was a setup for that.
Yeah.
Well, and that actually, when you get down to the nitty gritty of it, that dives into a ripple in time theory instead of a audio based thing. So, at the end of the movie, when they say, "Oh, well, you just passed right through, nothing disappeared." That was something for her personally that was a ripple in time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that whole thing just really kind of laid out the connection of space-time and quantum physics of sound. I mean, sure.
Dennis, you still with us?
Oh, yes, I am. I'm sorry. So.
No, I'm still here. I'm just sitting back absorbing, brother.
Just wondering if you were still there, that's all. Hadn't heard from you in a while.
No, I'm still here. I just don't... My knowledge of ET and so forth is very slim, so I just keep my mouth shut so as to not sound like a complete dumbass.
Have any other box makers called in tonight, or?
No, not anyone.
No. Not really. Because there's one guy in Chicago, Andrew Openlander, and he is producing wonderful boxes, doing great work.
You know what? I talked to him earlier, and he was asking, and this was my screw up throughout the whole promotion. I was at work when I was doing the promo for the show. I never posted the phone number, and then he sent me a message saying, "Hey, you know, is there a number, or do you accept callers? And I sent him back, yeah, sorry, here's the call-in number, and then I went back and edited the post, and I saw that he was offline, because he was saying he was real, real busy.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, but he's doing wonderful things, and I think his boxes will be very successful.
His boxes are great because they're also very artistic. They really lend a sort of a archaic or dead media image to him. He's
mm-hmm.
hopefully, I've gotten convinced he's maybe making me a theater, open air theater, you know, drive-in theater speaker.
Right. Yeah.
Which itself is interesting because one of the things that was always cool about the open air speakers was the metal that they used for the casing, the pig metal.
Right, right.
Just to have a box made in that type of metal is really,
mm-hmm.
I'm really biting at the bit to get on to that.
Yeah, yeah. And
you know what I'm actually kind of shocked that nobody's done yet is as far as, like, a, you know, casing and stuff like that. Like, everybody talks about, like, Verde and all that. Well, that's an isolation. If you talk about an accelerator, people talk about limestone and granite, and that nobody's made a 400-pound, you know, granite encasement that you put in to try and facilitate to bring stuff out more.
Oh, I see what you mean, yeah. Yeah, I'm
Did
surprised.
You say 400 pounds?
Well, I'm sure if it's anything of size, like a, well, the Verde bags are pretty small. When they first came out, they were very, very large. But,
yeah.
I mean, you make almost like a tomb that you put this thing in.
Well,
just to see
are you guys aware of, and this is something that in the experimental music world, a lot of the musicians have done experiments and focuses on. In England, for World War I, they used to have listening posts. And what they would do is take these granite stones, which were plentiful along the coast of England and France, and they'd carve them out in concave semispheres. There's, you know,
oh.
look up Red Car. Red Car was a famous one, and there's other famous listening posts. And what they listened for is Zeppelins to come in to bomb England, because they were having a lot of trouble with Zeppelins from Germany flying in World War I bombing England. And so they would put a microphone up against in front of these granite listening posts that they made by carving into these rocks and using them. So a lot of experimental musicians have been going over and using these leftovers from World War I, these monoliths, if you will, and doing recordings there.
Yeah.
All right. Gentlemen, real quick, we have a couple minutes left as far as live goes, and we have one returning caller being Ursula Bielski, and we also have Andy with us as well, as we were talking about Andy. So
very good.
Hey, Andy.
Have...
Awesome.
Hello, Ursula.
Hey, Andy.
Hi. I decided to call earlier. I got tied up.
Yeah.
Oh.
Hey,
yeah,
Dennis.
He was tied up.
that,
you hear that all the time, right?
Hey, Dennis, by the way, I'm going to introduce something, the whole Chicago power movement that's happening right now to Dennis, because normally it's a Southern movement when we're on our show. So, suck
right.
it, my friend. I love you.
It's what I miss.
Don't mind me, guys. I'll just be sitting over here on Obama damn self in Richmond, Virginia. Thanks for calling in. I'll be in the corner now.
So, hey, real quick, as long as we're live, Ursula, I know you got to throw out plugs. Michael, if you want to throw out any plugs that you have going on, and then Daniel, by the time we're probably done with that, it'll be going into archive. So if you guys want to go ahead, we can still talk for about an hour. So.
Okay, well, I have something I have to do. I have to actually do some EVP work right now.
Damn.
How about it,
Dan? Oh, man, you got plenty of time. It's just a matter of the show stays live until 11 o'clock. Then it goes into archives. So we've got plenty of time to continue talking if you've got time to stick around with us.
I just wanted to pop on really quick because I heard you guys talking about the Daniel had brought up the ET aspect of the boxes, and that again, that was something that Frank was always. It was always, you know, not even an issue. We just didn't know where these voices were coming from, and that's just something that I think a lot of researchers have come to just accept, not even to try and figure out where these voices are coming from. But we talked earlier when I was on about Mark Macy. That's how I started using, actually started doing the bridge building EVP work, and how I got my Joe's box through Jess Resman. And, you know, a lot of that was through Mark Macy, meeting Mark Macy. And, you know, later in his research and up until the present day, Mark Macy lost a lot of his followers and a lot of fans. We talked with Michael and I just talked about this recently because, you know, he, you know, people say he went over the edge and he was talking about other planets and aliens and whatever. But, you know, that's definitely a point of consideration. You know, is that progress? When we get to that point where we're talking about ghosts and aliens and dead people all at the same time, is that progress or is that a breakdown? I think that's a very valid question. Have we lost people when they, have they gone over the edge or have they made a breakthrough? Breakthrough is a great term, actually, it's an old term.
Hmm. Well, what's interesting is I'm gonna sign off.
Actually, so you guys carry on talking. I'll say good night. I love you guys.
Good night, Ursula.
Most of the people that work in radio, like I mentioned earlier, Jurgensen and Rawdive, and Cass and ASAP, a lot of people working in radio keep on with that.
Hmm.
Hello, Michael.
You know,
the whole alien, the ET thing.
Oh, Dennis and I have had some messed up stuff happen on the show, and we can get into that once we get an archive. But, Michael, real quick, do you have anything that you want to pub that you have coming up?
Yeah, I've got a bunch of gigs coming up. If they look at my Facebook site, I just posted some stuff, and I got a... Actually, it's an interview thing on a show I'm going out to L.A. to do Dub Lab Radio, and I've got a show coming up in New York. We play Feldgren, one in Austin with Rick Reed. Something else is all I forget. I should look at my own Facebook. But take a look. There'll be more information published about these shows coming up.
All right. David, you got anything coming up?
I'm just going to be continuing my several home investigations and the private work I do and just keep looking for answers, which I don't see any definite answers coming in the near future, unfortunately. I really don't.
Yeah. No, none of us really do.
And the one thing that also that I would always say that Frank would always say is, there are no experts, and that is so much so true. Yes.
Thank you.
True. No experts.
Yep. No unknown. There are no experts in the unknown.
Right.
So, Andy, now that we and I would love to have you back on and talk more about it so everybody can listen live, but the people who are called in can still hear, which we have a ton of them.
Yes.
What is it exactly that you do?
Me?
Well, oh, I'm a I'm a Ghost Box fan and a Ghost Box builder. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
I love you, Andy.
Thanks, Mike.
that's easy enough explanation.
you know what? I had you guys on my computer, and I was upstairs cleaning dishes, and I started hearing all these voices coming out of my basement. I thought my basement was haunted. So I went downstairs and realized you guys were on the air and were talking about me. So I had to call in really quick. So I'm sorry I'm late, you know.
No, it's fine. And you know, because of the lateness, and for what you do and what the whole aspect and concept of what the show is, I'm sure that what Frank has done in the past has inspired you, in working
Absolutely.
With him and saying, "Hey, I could probably tweak this myself a little bit," and I'm guilty of that as well. I have a bunch. I have six Shack hacks that I've modified in different ways to work in different ways and environments, plus SB7s, plus I have so much audio recording stuff, it's not even funny. But, I wish I had the brain to work the way that Michael does and say, hey, you know what, if I warp this record in a certain way and leave it clean, maybe the dust in the room will settle on it, and I'll get voices out of it. Like that's awesome to me. So
yeah, well, I love Frank. Frank's an idol to me, man. He's my inspiration, absolutely. You know, I got into this basically because of him. The idea to make a homemade ghost box that's completely purpose built for use towards spirit communication, entity communication, it knocked my socks off, you know. And I couldn't afford his boxes. They would turn up occasionally, and they were at like $300-$400, and I couldn't afford it, so I decided to build my own, you know, because I could afford that. I had the chops to do it, and it turned out to work out really well. Just almost like a happy accident. I just sort of put all the components together and used my skill to make it work, and it turned out great, you know. A lot of it goes to Steve Huff. You know, Steve was a huge fan of mine, and he just had the megaphone to get my work out there, and it just happened to work out really good. You know, I'm a very, very proud of what I do, and I'm very happy with what I do, and I love what I do. So that's basically it.
So what, how does your product function differently than everything else that's on the market?
Well, I look at it from an audio perspective. Basically, when I got into ghost boxing and started doing my own videos, the biggest problem was the sound quality. You know, the hacks were very noisy, and you know, I had a Radio Shack hack that was very noisy, and it had that popping sound, but it would step through the stations, and it sounded terrible. I mean, you got results out of it, but when you made a video and would put it online, you know, I could hear it, and maybe a few others could hear it, but, you know, the majority of people coming across your site looking at your videos would be like, well, I just hear a bunch of noise coming out, you know.
Yep.
So I wanted to make a box that sounded good, that had a decent sound quality to it. It was clean, because I'm a musician, I'm a music fan, I want good, clean sound, you know, so that's what I did. I made a box that sounded good. And the thing with Hoff, he had the same problems, you know. He was trying to get his name out there and make videos and get the word out, because really that's what it's all about. You're proselytizing this stuff, trying to get it out there so that people will understand that this is viable and it works, and it wasn't communicating well, it wasn't being broadcast well. So I made a box for him, and he loved it, and he made a video with it, and it sounded great. And then all of a sudden, he could, you know, people who didn't know anything about the ghost box or any interest in it could listen to this, and you could hear the voices coming out relatively pretty clear. I mean, it's still a work in progress, but it's, you know, it's way cleaner, way more understandable than what you would get from a hack or anything else, you know. And Frank, I love him to death, but his, you know, his boxes technically are fantastic. Great circuits, great wiring, great ideas and stuff, but they were also, you know, lacking in the sound department. And I wanted to make a box that was clean, simple, and easy to use, and sounded good, and I did it, you know, and it works out fantastic. It's, you know, I don't know what else to say. I'm still working on it.
That your boxes are very, very good, Andrew.
Well, thank you. You know, I never expected to be in this place. I'm just a guy alone in my basement tinkering away, and all of a sudden, you know, I got people all over the world emailing me, telling me my boxes are great and they want to buy them. I mean, it's just, it's amazing, you know, it's astounding.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if everybody saw or not, but I think it was on, I posted on Sunday for Monday, between 8 and 10, and I tagged a whole bunch of people in it on Facebook, and I ran out of tags. I was going through all the people in audio that I'm like, all right, these are the people that I want to comment on.
Okay.
Between 8 and 10 on Monday, there was a slew of people that ran their, you know, Shack Hacks, SB7s, Frank Box, Joe's Box, all the other boxes that were out there.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody got anything that came, Daniel, I know you did. I don't know if anybody got anything that actually came through that was, and it wasn't to contact Frank, it was just a tribute. Kind of like a 21-gun salute. So
I kept getting his name, though, and I got some very odd, quite odd recordings.
But anything intelligible?
Oh, yes, definitely. Something about last weekend, and then a sing-song, we took him away. And that just blew my mind. Last weekend, we took him away. And I don't know what else to say. It's just, I kept getting the name Frank, and I heard the Princess, and I recorded these things, so.
Definitely get to listen to those.
Yeah. But no one else really got much?
Yeah. So we haven't heard back yet. It's still kind of up in the air as to whether anybody has.
Oh. Well, I know of one woman who definitely has some audio, but she's not ready to present it yet, a good friend of his.
I got messages.
The other part is who's got it but hasn't told us yet.
I got private messages from over 75 people that have said that they ran their whatever device, their ghost box device, that's the easiest way to generalize it, saying that, oh my God, that was one of the best ones we've ever done. And that's why we said, you're not trying to contact Frank. It's like a 21-gun salute just to pay homage. Just run it for as long as you run it for 2 hours to see what you get. Yep. And people said that, no, we weren't trying to contact him, but we've gotten more stuff from that than we've ever gotten on location, and it's in my own house, and now I'm freaked out. Like, all right, well, that's pretty cool, because now I have a lot of private residences that I have to do.
That's good. Wow.
One thing, I have a Frank's box, and we were running it the other day, and it just kept saying Frank over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right, Dan? You still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're there.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it just says Frank, Frank, Frank over and over and over again.
Right. I was getting a bit of that as well.
And the Frank's box is great. You know, the one I have is pretty good. You just have to dial it into the right sound, and it produces great results, you know. Just have to be patient with it and let it run, like you said. Just listen to it, and it sounds great.
Hmm.
Now, Andy, I'm going to ask you this. I don't own a Frank's box or an Andy's box or Joe's box or any of the others. I have an SB7. Essentially,
right.
What is the difference between them? Can you help clarify that for, like, some of our listeners and myself?
Well, SB7 is basically a consumer model for, you know. Oh, go on. Whoever was going to say something, go on.
Oh, no, I don't know, same thing. It's a consumer model, you know, it's made in China, it's very cheap, it's got a really small little speaker in it, so you have to always plug it into something to get a decent sound out of it, and they use it's a radio sweep device that suppresses the radio part, so you hear a lot of white noise, and occasionally you'll hear a bit of vocal communication come through it. And it's kind of self-defeating, you know. If you have a clean analog sweep radio device that sweeps cleanly with good reception through the band, you will get response after response after response. And it's all intelligent. It's nuts, you know. Why would you want to suppress that? You know, because the box is designed for people who have this preconceived notion that you need to quench the broadcast noise because people will think it's matrixing or whatever, that you're just hearing the voices from the broadcast personalities and making it out the way you want it to be, but it doesn't work that way.
Right.
You develop an ear for it. You can tell the EVPs when they happen because they skip over several stations. They always sound the same, and they're responding intelligently, which is what the PSB7 doesn't do. It tries to squelch that, and it just cracks me up when I see, like, on a Ghost Adventures or whatever, they're running the PSB7 for, you know, 30 minutes, and they get one little response out that's intelligent. It's like, well, that's a waste of time, you know. If you use my box or Frank's box or Steve's box or any type of quality hack, you'd be having, like, 100 responses within 10 minutes, you know. It's all good. It's all relevant to what you're talking about and what you're asking about. So why would you want to squelch that, you know, just because you want to prove that it's not some guy on the radio talking about something that happens to be relevant to what you're asking, you know?
Yeah. Wow. But it does work, lots of times.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on ours, but it's very difficult to, you know, you actually have to be practiced on it to understand what the hell you're actually getting.
Oh, definitely.
You know, like I said, that's the only thing I've got. You know, so without practice, I've probably missed several things, but I always run a digital recorder along with it.
Yes.
So I can go back and review to make sure, you know, hey, did that say, yeah, okay, yeah, that, okay.
Right.
And
another thing is that the voices operate at different frequency levels. You know, a lot of times you get responses on the high end where they speak in a high pitch, and you'll have responses that speak at a low pitch, and sometimes they'll overlap. you know, so you'll have multiple voices coming through at the same time, some on the high end, some in the middle, some on the low end, and you have to be able to pick and choose what you want to listen to, or else you record it and go through it. But it's all over, like a radio like mine, my ghost box, you know, I use a quality speaker, a decent tuner. You listen to it, you can hear the highs and the lows, the different entities coming through on the different planes, and on the PSB-7, you don't get that at all, you know. It's just always very, you know, just one little voice blurting out from the noise, and I don't see how this is a popular ghost box at all, because it's very difficult to listen to, you know. I just don't get it.
Well, that's because it was featured on Ghost Adventures.
Yeah.
And then just that, it's cheap. That's why I have it was cheap. I actually bought mine I bought somebody's kit that was getting out of it because they were afraid they were going to bring something home and they were expecting a child. And I was like, you know, I don't need to be bringing anything home, so I'm getting out of this. He sold me everything in his briefcase for $150. And, hell, I got a Mel meter and got the SB7, three different digital recorders, and all kinds of crap. All right, well, for $150, I mean, look, it's got an SB7. Let's see what the hell it does.
Yeah.
It confuses the shit out of you at first is what it does.
Hey, Dennis, I want to interject on something as far as the ice bucket challenge goes. Ursula, well, I was going to do it, but I didn't do it. But Mark Butts, CPR Mark, called Ursula out, and she accepted the challenge. And also, her daughter did the her daughter Ava did the challenge yesterday. And this is verbatim over text. This is verbatim over text message. I sent her. Mark called you out for the challenge. Ha ha! I didn't. Just I was going to, but then I bit my tongue and I'm like, no, that, you know, whatever. It's that. That's kind of a pain in the ass to set up with how busy your schedule is. And she responds, what? 3 exclamation points, haha. Ava did it yesterday. I'll do it in costume. So keep an eye out for Ursula doing the ice bucket challenge in some sort of costume.
I'll be looking for that.
For those that think it's stupid, I will say this. I just left the website, ALSA.org. This thing has raised $31.5 million so far.
So since you last checked, which the report at the start of the show was $22
million. Yeah, now that was what I had heard this morning. So at the beginning of the show, I don't know what it actually was. But it's gone about $10 million just today.
That's awesome.
Hmm.
But, Andy, I definitely want to make sure that, and one of my fears, Blog Talk is kind of erratic on when it shuts us off. But Andy and Daniel, I definitely want to have the two of you back on. I want to continue talking about Ghost Box and Spirit Box, the technology that's involved in it, you know, how to improve the quality of them. But on occasion, Blog Talk decides, all right, well, you've had enough time, and just kicks us out.
Goodbye.
All you hear is a little British bitch go, goodbye. If we could get you two gentlemen to call back in perhaps next week, we'll continue our conversation.
Yeah, no problem.
Andy, well, I've sent both of you a phone request. You should see it received from CPR Dennis.
Right?
Okay. Okay.
We'll explain that later if you have any questions why I'm in Richmond and I'm under the CPR tag.
Okay, very good.
then Dale and Andy, Dennis is actually be joining us at Ghost Conference as well.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, okay.
We're going to get him there. Well, Daniel, I know you will.
Oh, yes, definitely. I look forward to that.
But yeah, Dennis is going to join us. I've met Dennis in Richmond at a event that I was at, and we hit it off. He's always been like a complete builder to me. Like, you know, Daniel, same as you are. Andy, I don't believe I've actually met you in person yet, but, it's one of those things to where, you know somebody has potential, and it didn't make sense on the CPR thing being he's in Virginia. So that's why he's CPR East and runs his team out in Virginia and has a phenomenal, phenomenal group of guys that work together very, very well. A lot of them law enforcement, which we don't get that acknowledgement around here.
Hmm.
So we have Ron Fabiani, who's paranormal cops, but that's pretty much about it when it comes to cops and paranormal in the Chicago area.
Right.
So
my team is actually 3 out of 5 are law enforcement, which is beneficial because it makes it easier for people to open the doors and locations to open for us, instead of just a group of who the hell are you, I can smile and tell them, law enforcement will be here, we're fine. But I definitely want to continue to talk. But
sure.
The main reason that I interjected was to make sure that if the little British bitch voice that comes in and tells us goodbye, you'll understand it's not us chucking you out. It's
okay.
Our fault putting us down.
All right.
If you guys are free next week, we can lock it in right now and start doing the pub for it tomorrow. It's up to you guys. I mean, we got enough of time. We're here every week, no matter what.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
Yeah, hell, we've even been here when we had no guest, and it was just Matt and I shooting the shit. But we always cover something worthwhile in paranormal or some other field.
Yeah.
So can we go ahead and lock for next week, gentlemen?
Okay. Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Excellent. Now, I have to ask, Andy, as a box builder, what the hell do you start with?
You need a good tuner, and you need something to drive it. You need a good voltage-controlled oscillator tuner. That's all it is. You know, you have a radio with a voltage-controlled tuner, and you hijack it, and you add your own circuit to it to make it do what you want to do. And it's very simple. It's very simple. You know, the trick is making it work well. That's it. You know, I got over 20 years' experience as an electronics tech, and I've worked with VCOs for most of my career. So it's natural to me to do it. You know, I can't really explain it other than to have the experience doing it. And I just feel it's a good match, you know. I'm an electronics guy. I love the paranormal. I love the ghost box. It just seemed to all just come together.
All right. So to dumb it down in layman's terms for the people who are still called in and listening, what exactly in the hell are you talking about?
Thank you, man. I didn't want to be the one with mud on my face going, well, that all sounds interesting, and I'm glad it's simple. Now, what the hell did you just say?
Well, look at it this way. You're taking peanut butter and chocolate and making Reese's Pieces with it.
There we go.
That's basically what you're doing. That's the way I look at it. You're taking one thing and adding something else to it and making something delicious out of it, you know. That's it. And what I do, you know, I look at it from an acoustics point of view. You know, my boxes are good quality wood. I use good speakers. Everything's hand-wired with good components, and it just comes out good, you know. So there's no real magic to it other than the alchemy that I put into it making it. It happens to just come out fine, you know. I know I had enough experience at this where I can listen to each box and tune it to give the response that I feel is appropriate, and then I ship them out, you know.
All right, so basically in a nutshell, what you're saying is you will start with a certain transceiver that responds positively between a certain hertz range. You'll put your tweak on it and add a adequate audio delivery device, a.k.a. speaker, and then you're going to adjust it with different diodes, different resistors to make it as best of quality as you can.
Yes. It's not rocket science. It's not, you know. Anyone with the aptitude and who can hold a soldering iron on the right end without burning themselves.
and eliminate
Dennis, that's where you screw up on. I've seen the hospital bills. Stop trying to be Frank.
Don't hold the hot end.
I promise you this. Every time I use a soldering iron, I have to drop it at least once. And I promise you where it will land. And it
crotch.
Makes me squeal like a little girl every time.
Crotch.
Precisely.
I'm going to call crotch.
That is precisely.
I have a great idea.
I caught the tail end of Michael talking about my drive-in theater ghost box with the metal and everything, and he's right in the sense that the materials have a lot to do with it. You know, that metal, the pot metal that they cast those boxes in, just seem to resonate really well. You know, and the wooden boxes that I use tend to resonate really well. The thing is, you got to do the experimenting, trying to find what sounds best, and then just run with it, you know.
Now, how long does it take you to make one?
It takes me many hours. In fact, you know, I'm finding out that it takes me a lot longer to build these than I thought they would because I fuss over them so much, and which is one of the reasons why I'm kind of backlogged on getting my orders out, because I don't want to send anything out that doesn't meet my standards, you know. And see, if people are paying me a lot of money for one of these things, I want to give them the best thing I could possibly give them, you know, not disappoint them, you know. So
that brings up another question. Do you, now you already mentioned that you do these in the basement, and that's like your workshop. Do you do test sessions in the basement?
What was that? Can you repeat that?
I said you had explained that you build these in your basement.
Yes.
So each box that you build, do you run a session with it to see how it does? And
I do. I burn them in and test them. And oftentimes, like they tell me what I'm doing right and doing wrong. They do. They say, "Does this sound all right?" And they'll say, "It's too fast, too slow, or it doesn't work right, or whatever." I always look for the response. That's the key thing. If I'm not getting good response out of it, I'll keep messing with it until I do get good response out of it.
So how many spirits do you have in your basement, and does it not freak you the hell out to know that?
What was that?
I said, how many spirits do you have in your basement, and does it not freak you out to know that?
No, it doesn't freak me out at all. You know, I've been doing this for like 8 years now, and I'm used to it. Like, I'm comfortable with it. Doesn't bother me at all. You know, I live on the northwest side of the city, and in this little bungalow, and I got my little workshop in the basement, and I have a. But oftentimes, what I'll do is I have a, you know, a stereo receiver, and I'll plug my boxes into the receiver and crank it up and just let it fill the room and let it talk to me while I'm working. And I get lots of responses. I hear them talking to each other. I hear responses to me. They comment on what I'm doing, call me names, whatever. I'm comfortable with it. You know, some people, you know, I've heard that, you know, a lot of people say, like, oh, I never use a ghost box in my house. I don't want to attract bad spirits or whatever. And to me, that's bunk. You know, if you're nice and you're kind and respectful, they always respond in kind. You know, I never had any problems with the activities that I generate or the responses I get. It's all very benign, it's all very good, and it's all very helpful. You know, my boxes get better and better the more I build them. The better I get at them, the better the responses are. It's all a very positive trajectory, you know.
No, definitely. I can't wait till we get to Chicago Ghost Conference. I'd love to see one of your boxes in action.
You will. I got a table there. I got some special boxes I've set aside that I'm going to build for the conference and offer them for sale. Maybe have a couple of the theater speaker boxes that Michael was talking about, and some unique creations and stuff. This is the very first time that I'll be presenting my stuff out in that kind of a format. I've never done any ghost cons before or anything like that. I'm usually a pretty private guy. But, you know, thanks to my success through Hofts and other areas, I kind of have to get myself out there. You know, I feel it's important, and, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. I don't know exactly what I'm going to do, because I've never done anything like this before. But I'm going to give it the best I can, you know. So I want everybody to be able to see the boxes and hear them in action, because I believe in it 100%. I'm not in this to get rich. I'm not in this for the fame or nothing. I just want everybody to experience the same thrill that I get from building these. And that's it.
And you'll do very well.
Well, thank you. I look forward to seeing everybody there. You know, I don't know what, you know, I might try to do something unique and special, but I have no idea what I'm doing yet. So hopefully I'll have something figured out by then.
Well,
oh, sure you do.
And Huff will be there too. So, you know, it's a rare opportunity to see the both of us together. You know, I knew Huff, I knew his sister. We grew up together in the same neighborhood. And I might have bullied him on the playground when I was a kid, but I don't remember. He's a few years younger than me. But this will be the first time you'll see the both of us together. And I'm really looking forward to meeting him in person. And meeting everybody else involved, you know, there's some of my customers will be there, flying in special just to hang out with us, and you know, again, this is all pretty new to me. I started this like a year ago, a little over a year ago, and everything's been happening really fast, and I'm inundated with orders, and I'm building stuff as fast as I can and as well as I can. And it's just, it's hard for me to get a really grasp on it, just how well things are going, because it's just, it's all turning out so well, you know. And I'm very happy about it, and I'm really looking forward to doing the conference, because like I said, I've never done anything like this before. I'm a pretty private guy. I like to keep to myself, and work out of my basement, but I feel the need that stuff is powerful enough, it's strong enough, I need to get out there and show it to the world.
Right.
Okay.
And it is odd that you, I, and Steve Huff all went to the same school.
That's right. We went to Berry Elementary over at
yeah.
Diversity and Kilbourne.
Yeah.
So we're native Northwest Siders. And Dan, too.
Yep.
Yeah, I definitely look forward to it. And like I said, all I've got is the SB7, so I don't really have anything, to judge. You know, you had mentioned that, you know, the quality of it and blah, 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 and how cheap it is. I'd definitely love to hear one of the actual handmade ones that sounds good that can do what they're all supposed to do. So I'm kind of excited and stoked for this. But, yeah, definitely Chicago Ghost Conference. I may even have to, I don't know, maybe I'll throw Matt's ass out on the street and pimp him out for a little while and see if I can get enough money to buy one of them.
That'll probably happen. Dennis will whore me out any chance he gets.
Oh, yeah. I'll pimp him out in a heartbeat.
Well, yeah, you spit in my face and basically dressed me up like a skank and put me outside, which is where that photo from Pennsylvania came from. Thanks, ass.
I didn't spit in your face. It was makeup. And besides, you were the one walking around the entire conference asking anybody how you could make your outfit look douchier.
This is true. I did do that. I wore a chromed out shirt and like the douchiest pants I could find, and plus put on a fedora. And I would walk up to random people and be like, "All right, I know how this looks, but I'm trying to figure this out. How can I make my outfit look a lot more douchier?" And the general response, like, and it's a tribute to Zach Bagans. The average response that I got was, "No, you pretty much nailed it."
Yeah.
So, yeah, I kind of get that. But
yeah, it was definitely entertaining.
All right, Dennis Miller, you want to call it quits before Blog Talk kicks us off and we look like assholes?
Yeah, I'm kind of dumbfounded that we've lasted this long. But ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for joining us for another episode of Full Spectrum Radio. Tonight's guests have been wonderful to talk to. Andrew, Daniel, Michael,
thank
Ursula,
you.
Thank you all so much for joining us. I look forward
yes.
to hearing from the two of you next week as well.
Yes,
my pleasure.
Make sure to throw out your plugs if you have anything. And Daniel, why don't you throw out your plugs right quick and we'll move on.
Huh?
Yeah. So throw out any plugs that you want to throw out real quick.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, you can visit my webpage at www.chicagospiritwave.com. I also run a blog that I haven't updated in a while, but I may update it again. It's ghostlotto.blogspot.com. That's where I use my spirit box to ask for lottery numbers. It was a gimmick I started early on, just for yucks, and it was fun. I never won, but the box would always give me numbers. So it was always fun just listening to shout out, like, "Oh, can you give me a number between 0 and 9? I'd be like, 3, you know. It was on and on and on. And I always asked for the pick 3 numbers and never won, you know. But I came close a couple times. I got 2 out of 3, and I'd post them. But it's an old blog, and I probably maybe might get back into it again. I don't know, but... But yeah, check out my web page, and I got lots of videos on there, pictures of my boxes, clips and everything, and information if you want to, you know, get on my waiting list to buy one or whatever. And that's, you know, that's where I'm at right now. You know, I'm still just a guy in my basement building boxes, and they're all handmade and all made to the highest quality that I could possibly muster, given my skills.
Very good.
So yeah, thank you guys very much, man. I appreciate you. And again, it's all about Frank. You know, Frank's the man. I mentioned on my website and stuff. You know, I was a huge fan of his. But I was one of the few people who never reached out to him because he's a rock star to me, and to me, rock stars are always meant to be worshipped at a distance. But I never realized he was so approachable. You know, he was a very approachable guy, and a lot of my contemporaries had relationships with him, you know, online relationships, talking about the ghost box and stuff. But to me, I was always scared of him, because I was, always thought that he would hate my work and hate me as well, and it was all unfounded. It turned out to actually be a really great guy, and I totally regret not having known him, you know.
Yeah. He was a sweetheart, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
And I have number 164. In my collection.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I'll never sell it. I traded it for one of my boxes and gave it to my girlfriend for a Christmas present. And she loves it, you know, and we listen to it. And now that he's gone, we've been listening to it a lot more. And it turns out to be a fantastic box. So he's a true craftsman, a true pioneer. And his legacy will live on forever, you know, because this is just the beginning. You know, we're just beginning to really tap into the communication stream. I like to liken it to, like, we're kind of like in the Marconi stage of ghost communication, spirit communication, whatever you want to call it. It's just going to get better and better as we learn more about it and make more advancements, you know. But it's fantastic, you know, to be on this early level of it, using the radios, converting to radio technology for these purposes. I know, like, near the end, Frank was experimenting with video boxes, trying to make the ghost box circuitry with a television receivers with varying success. He kind of abandoned it because the TVs that he used were too delicate to really work with once you start peeling them apart, and they weren't really made to be serviced or messed with, so they'd fall apart. So he kind of gave it up, you know. But you know, he was on a different path at that point, you know, and never got to really fulfill it, you know. But who knows? Yeah. You know, this could be the start of something really big, you know, where we move on from using radios to even bigger and better things, and hopefully with the ultimate goal of achieving absolute clear and crystal communication with the other side.
Right.
Well, Daniel, I know, being at the research center in Chicago,
yes.
did you guys mess at all with the combination, like 1980s TV that I brought in?
We never did get around to using that. Unfortunately, we never did.
Yeah, it's still there. I haven't gotten to use it either. And Andy, what it is it's it has a tape recorder or a tape player on the top, which also does have a record function.
Yes,
it's a It's a black and white TV with an analog radio, and it's also an analog TV that doesn't bring in anything digital. It has it has knobs. It doesn't have like a digital scan. So, where we got this from is when I was growing up in Texas, we had a boat, and that used to be the TV that we used on the boat. It's probably, Danny, what would you say? Probably like a four inch or 5 inch screen.
Yeah, about that. Yeah,
it's all black and white, and everything on it's analog.
Well,
right?
How did we use it?
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out some sort of experiment. Like, I was talking to David Roundtree about it too, and like trying to figure out some sort of experiment that we can figure out about it. But with it not being able to scan, you have to actually manually scan it. Well, how fast do you twist your fingers?
Yeah, that's true. How about if you attach something to a drill that would fit right around the dial, and, you know what I mean, and hold the drill and have that scan it, if you know what I mean?
Well, you just have a motor attached to it. You know, this attach a motor and a pulley, and,
right.
And,
okay.
And have it step back and forth, you know. It's not hard to do.
That's the other issue, is you have to figure out timing to where it's not going to strip out the plastic gears that are inside of it. So it would have to run for so long, you know.
You have a reversible motor, and when it got to a certain point, the relay would click it, and it would start winding back the other way. You know, you'd have to manually adjust it to do that, you know.
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of electronic development involved in that, I mean, hell, since the foundation was founded, I haven't actually had the time or the free time to be able to be down there for any of the experiments, which, Daniel, you told me the same thing, Ursula told me the same thing, Colleen told me the same thing. There's a shit ton of activity going on where that foundation is.
Well, the Chicago Center for Psychical Research, and the goal was to attempt one-on-one direct-time communication and real-time communication.
Yeah.
And we did other things, though. We did a Ouija board sessions, and we did various other things, but I think we're going to get back to the original goal. So, I hope you're listening, Ursula.
I definitely, and I was talking to Ursula about it too, I have a ton of experiments that I want to try down there, and hopefully after my work schedule calms down a little bit, I'll be able to get in there on weekends and be able to do it, because the ideas behind and we're running out of time, so I'm not going to go into it now. I'll talk about it more next week, but
Yeah,
the ideas behind it are the hypothesis that I formed about what goes on there and how to talk about it. Yeah, it's going to be some, holy shit, I can't believe you thought of that.
Wow. I look forward to that.
That I will promise.
Okay.
And this is where, once again, I just have to sit over here in the corner in Richmond and go, hi, guys. Damn it. And it's all the cool stuff.
Well, Dennis, you're going to be part of it as well, doing a live remote view. And whatever you're seeing is what we're going to try and contact at that time.
All right,
okay.
I'm done with that. I just did another one for Lyle, Twisted Paranormal, and he hadn't even been to the location, so I just gave him what I encountered as I did my remote. He shot me a message this evening. He's listening to the audio, but as far as the layout, he said I did pretty damn good on the layout. the energies that they encountered, he said, I seem to be spot on with that so far. He's waiting to get through all of his audio and see how the rest of it comes out. So once again, another winning remote view.
Yeah.
Pardon me? Entertaining. Oh.
So, and just to give you a quick background, since you guys weren't tuned in at the beginning of the show or recently, Dennis does remote viewing on locations.
Oh, okay.
So one of the theories I want to test is remote viewing of what he's seeing at that time at that place when he's in Richmond, Virginia, and we're at, you know, at the research center. If he's seeing something, if we get anything that coincides with what he's seen as far as evidence goes.
Right. Yeah, that's a very good idea.
So there's so much stuff out there that says, oh, yeah, you know, like Amy Allen, for example, she'll walk through, and then with Steve DeShavi, he'll do his evidence and all that stuff like on the show. But there's never anything that's been tested that's proven of somebody doing a remote to somebody who's at the location doing those tests as the person who's doing the remote is saying them, if there's anything that coincides with what comes through.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. We should do that so very, very soon.
That's one of the things I want to test.
Should definitely be interesting.
Yep.
Now, I would have loved to have had it over the weekend when you showed up at wherever in the hell you called me from and put me on the spot. Did y'all have audio running or anything? Or was it just a tour or something?
No, it wasn't a tour. It was a bunch of 40-year-old women getting drunk listening to me talk about spooky shit. It was actually pretty awesome. Dennis, one thing I didn't tell you is there were two psychics on location in different rooms that were doing readings.
Okay.
Whether or not that they brought some stuff in that you were picking up, I have no idea. I've been perplexed about that one for a while now.
Well, it's potential. They could have brought energy with them. Or,
and,
you know, we're trying to bring energy in.
And Dennis, being part of the CPR family, I will tell you this flat out. He knows more than anybody. I am not a reader, psychic kind of person.
Right.
So for me to back him, it really does say a lot as far as what I've experienced and what his abilities are.
I just think it's funny.
But anyway, gentlemen, we're going to get kicked off very, very shortly. I can promise you that. So I appreciate it and definitely look forward to talking to you guys next week.
Yes, thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
So, same time, same place. It's going to be Full Spectrum Radio from 8 to 10 p.m. our time. That's awesome I can say that because normally I have to say Central Time, but it's been all Chicago people that have been involved tonight. So, and next week, yes, Dennis, we'll bring it back down south after this.
No big deal. We'll figure it out, brother. We'll figure it out. Andy, I want to thank you so much for joining us, brother. Daniel and Michael have already bugged out. I'm going to do our sign-off right quick. Andy, we'll talk to you next week, sir.
Yes, sir. I'll see you then.
All right, buddy. You take care. Have a great week.
Good night.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, been another episode of Full Spectrum Radio. I am CPR Dennis.
I am CPR Matt.
You can find us under those names at Facebook and Twitter. You can also find us under Chicagoland Paranormal Researchers on Facebook page, and coming soon will be the Chicagoland Paranormal Researchers at the .com. Don't forget, go out, donate to ALS. Look on my wall, look on Matt's wall. You can find the link for Frank Sumption's GoFundMe.
help his family lay him to rest with dignity and pride. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for joining us. Have a great week. God bless.
Good night, everybody.